You're listening to Lake Effect here on Milwaukee Public Radio. As we've said, WUWM is beginning a series of reports airing this week and next on youth violence in Milwaukee. Few Milwaukeeans have better historical perspective on our big city challenges than John Gerda. He's author of 18 books of Milwaukee history, including The Making of Milwaukee. He's here to share thoughts on the history of violence in our city. Welcome back to Lake Effect.
Thank you, Jane. Glad to be here.
There are many ways to look at the history of violence in Milwaukee. But one thing I wonder is this perception that it's worse than it's ever been. It's never been violent the way it is now in Milwaukee. When you hear people say that, what's your response?
My response is yes and no. You know, certainly violence is as old as Cain and Abel, and anything that is good about human nature, anything that's bad about human nature is here in Milwaukee as well, because we are a major city. And I think one pattern that stands out throughout our history is that if you have especially newer groups who have struggled to get organized, they have often floundered somewhat economically, and that has bled over into social problems, including violence. And that begins very early. And there was a neighborhood when it was a neighborhood, it's in its first incarnation, the Third Ward, back in mid-1800 Milwaukee, that was largely Irish. And it was known far and wide as the Bloody Third, because there was bloodshed there as a lot of result of a lot of disturbances of one kind or another. And I found a brief item from the Milwaukee Sentinel back in 1857, and they would cover the police blotter and what was going on in town. And the Sentinel was called upon to defend a fellow by the name of O'Byrne, who had helped the police quell a riot in the Third Ward. A lot of this was alcohol-fueled. No, there were a lot of what they called rum holes in the Third Ward. And the Sentinel said, "The character of O'Byrne stands without an exception for the past 10 years as that of a good, peaceable, and upright man and citizen. If all in the Third Ward were like him, the police might be safely disbanded today." So that gives you some idea what the police were spending their time doing back in the mid-1800s.
Well, it's interesting because you draw a couple of parallels that seem relevant today, talking about alcohol and its relationship to violence, mm-hmm. and drug abuse, and poverty, tying to economic themes. Is that what you saw then as the city grew?
Absolutely. And the cast of characters would change. The Irish, you know, moved up, moved out, are doing just fine today. You know, one of the most influential groups in the Milwaukee area today. But you have people replacing them in the Third Ward, the Sicilians, in the later 1800s. No, that was an ethnic group that also, you know, endured its share of social disorganization. And during the era of Prohibition, you know, 1919 to 1933, you know, that was a pretty active source of illicit alcohol for a lot of Milwaukeeans.
So this underground economy fueled it.
Absolutely. An alternative economy, you know, based on illegal substances and often with a code enforced by violence. And Milwaukee was never, compared to Chicago, you know, which was certainly, is still, you know, kind of the gangsterism is part of their legacy and heritage. Gangsterism is certainly, you know, part of the folklore of Chicago. In Milwaukee, because you had a very active police presence, there was a chief named Jacob Laubenheimer who really closed the door to that kind of very organized activity. There was less of it than there was in Chicago, which is not to say it was not here. It's not to say that there was not violence as a result of Prohibition and its violation.
Did the socialists and their clean government idea have anything to do with the level of violence in the city?
They had the influence of reducing it compared to cities that were, relatively speaking, more wide open. Certainly, you know, there was a desire for public order, you know, for good civic housekeeping that was absolutely, you know, underlined by the socialist mayors here, you know, for all the years they were in office.
And yet there were gangs on Milwaukee's north side as early as the early 1900s.
Absolutely. There was a kind of a rash of gang activity in the first couple decades of the 20th century. And there was one especially colorfully named gang, the Titonia Indians, who were kind of the terrors of the near north side. And you look at the, you know, that kind of activity today, you think of it as sort of Bowery Boys, innocent fun. These guys were killing each other. You know, this was not good, clean fun. You know, people kind of dusting it up in the neighborhood, you know, the back alleys and so on. This was Probably, you know, perhaps it was involved with prohibition a little bit later, but you know, it was sort of turf battles, you know, that you see in some of the, you know, the more hardscrabble neighborhoods today.
Killing each other in what way? Because guns didn't have the influence
there
then.
There were some guns back in the early 1900s, and certainly back in the 1800s as well. As a matter of fact, probably the most tragic loss of life to violence was in the 19th century, and that was back in 1886 when most Milwaukee workers were on strike and showing their support for the 8-hour day without a cut in pay. They shut the city down, and on the morning of May 5th back in 1886, after the governor had called out the militia, and they were guarding industrial plants where the demonstrators were marching, trying to shut them down. On the morning of May 5th back in 1886, a crowd of roughly 1,500 workers were marching on the Bayview Rolling Mill, which was then the largest employer in Milwaukee. And the militia opened fire at a distance of roughly 200 yards and killed at least five, perhaps as many as nine. Including a 12-year-old schoolboy who was playing hooky and a retired mill worker watching from his backyard. So you have that kind of violence as well, and to some degree the officially sanctioned violence. And that was absolutely horrifying to the vast majority of most of Milwaukee residents.
So there was a willingness in these early days to pull the trigger.
There was, absolutely.
You hear a lot of people from all different neighborhoods in the city say, I grew up in such and such a neighborhood, and it wasn't the way it is now. It was great back then. I remember it being safe and nurturing, and it was a wonderful place to grow up. What's happened to my neighborhoods? Is that just nostalgia, or is there some truth to this feeling?
I think there's some truth, but there is also a natural human amnesia. We tend to cast kind of a golden glow over the landscapes of our youth, and if not willfully neglect, at least fail to remember accurately, you know, a lot of the things that were going on, you know, in our earlier years. Life was simpler then, maybe because we were simpler then, you know, as young people. But all these neighborhoods, and you hear about it, you know, you and I were on a panel a couple of weeks ago, and one of the panelists was talking about how wonderfully safe the area around 27th and Forest Home was, you know, on the near south side back in this is the 70s. And I worked in that area, and there was not necessarily a place where it was a rose garden of cooperation and complete harmony. No, there was violence, there were gangs there as well. So I think certainly there is a natural human tendency to romanticize the past. At the same time, you know, there is, I would argue, and I don't know how you quantify these things, a level of violence that is certainly absolutely centered around handguns. You know, the underground market for, the above ground market for weapons of violence is certainly exponentially greater than it was back in the 1800s. Guns existed, but they were not as readily available or as readily used, you know, as they seem to be today.
And handguns play a huge role in the gang culture we're talking about today, on the north side, the south side. What about the roots of those gangs and those neighborhoods? As you point out, I mean, these are just the latest populations in neighborhoods that have been turning over for decades.
The same dynamics, the same degrees of poverty, hopelessness, social disorganization, and people without hope will turn to other means of satisfying basic human needs. And those will, in the absence of other alternatives, you know, resort to violence. And you see a lot of that in neighborhoods today that are as poor, relatively speaking, as, say, the North Side, some of the North Side German areas, the Third Ward Italians, the Third Ward Irish. You know, it's, in some ways, it's, and I don't want to downplay the complexity of our current situation, but in many ways it's simply the latest incarnation of a very old pattern, you know, in this city and in this society.
Well, John, thanks for joining us again.
Thank you, Jane.
Milwaukee-born writer and historian John Gerda is a Lake Effect contributor. He's author of 18 books, including The Making of Milwaukee. The Arts Page is up next on the program. Milwaukee's In Tandem Theater wraps up its first season in the Big Red Church. This is Lake Effect from WUWM.